We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's the True Faith Newcastle United podcast. Newcastle have won 2-0 at Brentford. One of the biggest wins of the season. I'm saying that every single week at the minute. It is a fantastic time to be a Newcastle United supporter. Newcastle are one of the form teams in the Premier League, are unbeaten in 7 games, and are quite frankly flying at every single level. It's an absolute pleasure to be joined by Charlotte Robson, Ben Wade and Norman Riley on this podcast. My little message first, of course, is we're on Patreon, £6.60 a month for 30 to 40 these days, extra Newcastle United podcast. Podcast this week coming up with Craig Hope of the Daily Mail, coming up with Warren Barton or Keith Gillespie to talk about Newcastle United's fantastic win and also looking ahead to the Brighton game next week. So come and join us on Patreon. Would love to have you along. Let's get into it. What a win for Newcastle United, Norman. You were there yesterday. You were one of the 1,700 in that away end. Newcastle United's first, well, actually Newcastle United's second game at, I think, the Brentford Community Stadium. And although there were no fans there present, back in December 2020, in what was a real low point for the club under for the previous manager, how was it for you yesterday? How did you feel at full time witnessing such a comprehensive win in the sunshine with those players?
I felt overjoyed, and I can't really put into words the specific overjoyed is one of the feelings, but just full of hope and utterly convinced we're going to avoid relegation. And more or less certain, we're not only going to avoid relegation, but it's going to be quite comfortable. I really feel that where we are now, 14th of the table, it wouldn't surprise me if that's where we finish at the end of the season. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if we finished above a team like Crystal Palace, which would be an incredible achievement. But the inside the stadium itself, the start of the match, you could feel it. You could feel how confident we were as a fan base. There was just noise from moment one onwards. The singing never really stopped. The sending off, I mean, even before the sending off, the atmosphere was brilliant and I felt that confidence, and I think most fans did as well. I thought we were in control of the game, and the sending off, I suppose, kind of took it up a notch. But even then, did it take it up a notch? I don't know. I think we were just, there's just a belief, right? There's this belief on the pitch. You can see it when the players come out. You can feel it among the fans. The connection between the fans and the players and the management is fantastic. And this, as I say, the singing never stopped. The sunshine was so important yesterday that you had to put your hand over the top of your head, over your eyes to see at the other end of the pitch. It was so bright. And it was great being in a stadium that's as compact as that as well, because you really kind of, your vantage point's really good, and the kind of tightness of the stadium creates a really good atmosphere. Brentford fans are pretty quiet. You know, you can see why. But we were excellent, I thought. And obviously, I spoke to a Brentford fan, my friend Jake, who was on the away end podcast that Peyton's got a chance to listen to, and he said that we were one of the best away supports he's seen this season. So I suppose that gives you an indication as to just how good it was. And I, at full time, the players and management come over, and I don't know if anyone's seen the photos. Any of you on this podcast have seen the photos, or you saw post-game live, the look on the players' faces, the look on Howe's faces, it's just one of kind of almost like this delight and this shock that fans are so clearly utterly in love with what's going on at the minute. It was a brilliant day, mate, and one that, compared to Wolverhampton Wanderers in October, which would have been the last game before the takeover, me and you in a hotel. So actually, post-match, stood in a car park outside of a garden centre in Wolverhampton waiting for a taxi. Miserable in the grey, damp weather. Getting a taxi back into Birmingham, doing the podcast in a hotel on a Sunday morning, questioning what the point of supporting Newcastle United was. I can't get over that change. It's huge, huge. It's like two different, it's like two different worlds, mate.
I totally agree, and I'm pleased you brought that game up, because it's, you know, we've all got our moments. There's all been moments supporting Newcastle United, particularly in the last 10 years, that lots of people listen, it might have been the final straw, it might have been the lowest point. That Wolves game for lots of us there, I think, was the lowest point. And people still tweet me weekly, particularly at the minute, saying sometimes they go back and listen to our despair, Norman, on that podcast, just to kind of make them realise how real this is and how bad it was before. But it's an unbelievable turnaround. I think, you know, Newcastle are second in the form table in the Premier League, and trying to, you know, seeing the, because I wasn't at the match yesterday, but seeing the scenes in the away end for the goals, seeing Joe Linton, who we'll talk about later, sprint the length of the pitch to celebrate with supporters. You learned that from Jonjo Shelvey, but fair enough. And also just the complete happiness. It's just like, it's just smiling faces absolutely everywhere. And it's a, you have to, you know, embrace and relish these moments and these times and these days, because we will go through a bad run of form again. We have very difficult fixtures at the end of the season. I look at a little bit of what other fans are thinking, and while some fans are looking at Newcastle United and thinking they're away, let them go. The Premier League put a very satisfying graphic out last night saying, who's going relegated? Getting relegated. And then Newcastle United weren't even on the league table they posted. So high are we in the league at the minute. But we have got tough games to come, particularly in April. And I think other fans are looking at those games and how thinking, all right, Newcastle are going to build a bit of a lead before them, but we'll be right back in at the time. I don't think that'll happen, but I understand the sentiment. Ben, let's talk about this win in kind of the context of the relegation battle. You know, quite simply, Burnley have had an unbelievable week. An unbelievable week, yeah, still 4 points behind. Watford have had a fantastic couple of results, if you ignore midweek, but they've picked up 4 points out of nine with two really tough away games. Yet these teams still find themselves a long way behind Newcastle United. How strong do you think Newcastle's chances of survival are right now?
Oh, unbelievable. I'm with Norman. I do not see Newcastle United getting relegated. You spot on as well. I mean, I think it's important with those two teams as well. I mean, especially Burnley, they've kind of been screwed by their own circumstances. And I'm not necessarily saying they kind of created that. Obviously, if they had COVID, they had COVID, whatever. But the fact that there's so many games behind teams, it's allowed us to kind of get a good gap ahead of them. And regardless of whether they have a great result, they know they're going to be behind us because we've played an extra couple of games. And I think just that, the psychological impact of that is they're constantly chasing. And every time they make some progress, it's not still not really, they're never going to kind of get up level with us for a good while. So I think just psychologically, that's a massive, massive like sort of bonus for Newcastle squad to know that they've got these games in hand. I mean, we've all been talking about the Brentford one being a huge one as well. The fact that we had two games on them and that game's coming up, obviously we've done the business against them now. So again, that's another team that we've kind of put ourselves in a great position. If you're looking about comparisons between who, we just have to finish above three teams, and we've got ourselves in a great position against a few. So it's absolutely massive. I think it is interesting as well. You kind of look at the clubs that are outside of the relegation zone at the minute. So your Everton, your Leeds. The big thing for me, and probably why Newcastle and Burnley have been able to kind of get a bit of momentum going, is because just defensively, we've sorted everything. I mean, Burnley are always known as a tough place to go to. They keep games very tight. They stay in games, and they're a difficult team to kind of break down. Newcastle weren't that for very long. For ages. And you think about the first kind of five, six games of Eddie Howe's reign, and there was a little bit of kind of nervousness about the fact that we just couldn't shut up shop. And we shipped three goals to Brentford, and obviously this is a perfect kind of mirror kind of game to say how far we come defensively. We can hold on to victories now and kind of win games on just being better defensively than the teams. And I think if you look at Everton and Leeds specifically, they are two shocking defensive teams. That's why they're in free fall, because they can't stop teams getting easy goals against them.
Totally agree. And I'm pleased you raised the Brentford home game there. Always a nice bit of symmetry, isn't it, when you look at these return fixtures. The West Ham game last week shows how much would come on fitness-wise and physically. Brentford as well. That first game against Brentford was complete chaos. Complete chaos. The game was chaos. Not just Newcastle United, the game was chaos. Yesterday, and we'll talk about the red card maybe later, was kind of orderly and planned and organized and all of the things, like you correctly say, Ben, not just for how to achieve this transformation mid-season with largely the same group of players. It's an extraordinary achievement. Norman, you want to come in?
Just quickly, for the first time, and this has been the last couple of weeks, really, what we're talking about other relegation rivals and what they can do and what they're potentially good at and how bad they may be in certain situations. You know what? I'm genuinely not thinking about other teams anymore. I'm so confident that Newcastle United have got enough by some distance to pick up the points we need to stay up. And other teams, like I'm not even concerning myself with them anymore. When I was at the match yesterday, I didn't keep an eye on any other team's results. I'm that confident that we're going to stay up. And that is there's this mindset that we've had, right, for years under Mike Ashley, of looking at other teams and hoping that, oh, if they get beaten, then we're this far ahead. And, oh, no, if they win that game in hand. You know what it is? I'm not thinking like that anymore. It's almost like I've had this kind of, this mind shift. It's like, no, Newcastle United on its own are going to be fine and nobody else's results matter to me anymore. Other than Everton away, perhaps, where if we lose that, I might get a bit twitchy. But, nah, as I say, the first time in a long time, I'm only concerned with what Newcastle United are doing, and it's brilliant.
Norman, get back on your meds.
I agree with you, mate. And it is interesting, isn't it, that kind of trust that we all have in the team to do its own job and not have to rely on the failures of others is also refreshing. I also think that, you know, we got a good look at Brentford yesterday. I've seen Brentford twice this season. I mean, Newcastle United hoy 3 goals in against them at our place and won comfortably yesterday. I mean, it hasn't really been said. I thought Brentford's keeper kept that game respectable, yeah, as much as Newcastle United managed the game in the second half, which again we'll touch on later. I just think when I look at Brentford yesterday, I think, all right, yeah, they were down to 10 men. But I look at Newcastle United with 10 men against Norwich and how difficult the crowd were for Norwich, how difficult the team made it for Norwich. Newcastle, I thought Newcastle were better than Brentford, albeit there hadn't been much going on 11v11. But there was such a gulf in defensive ability, in how the team attacks, how the team plays midfield between Newcastle and Brentford. I'm going to say it right now. It looks to me, on the basis of what we've seen recently in Brentford's, 9 defeats in 10 or something like that, it is simply impossible to me that Leeds United or Brentford will finish above Newcastle United this season. I agree with you, Norman, with your point at the start of the podcast. Newcastle could be looking at 14th place in the Premier League, which again would be a remarkable achievement considering what Eddie Howe inherited. We're going to leave it there for part one of the show. Going to leave you with some advertisements now. Remember, you get this podcast advertisement free on our Patreon platform, which is £6.60 a month. We'll be back straight after these.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Charlotte, the hero of the day, of the week, of the month, in fact.
Of the season.
Of the season, of the century. It's Joe Linton, Newcastle United's number 7. Huge goal for him yesterday. What would you like to say?
I I'd like to say, well done, Joe Linton. I'd like to say, thank you, Joe Linton. I'd like to say so many things. I'd like to like sing songs to him. Just a lush goal, really good, powerful header. He was like fairly unmarked, allowed to just like sort of dive into the box and head it straight into the goal. Lovely to watch. But even lovelier still, being able to see him then sprint the length of the pitch, as you said at the top there, taking a leaf out of John Joe Shelby's book, going straight to the fans. And the sort of point I wanted to make was, you know, I was very much one of the people who didn't like Joe Linton, didn't understand why he'd been bought, didn't understand where he fit in. He didn't seem to understand where he fit in. And he got fairly slated. I slated him. He was, you know, we were not generous to him on this podcast very often. And for him to sort of get that goal and then sprint straight to the fans and celebrate with the fans, I just felt like that meant... it meant so much to him. And it could have been like, look, I've done it. Like, it could have been a more obnoxious celebration. Do you know what I mean? But it was a, I've done this for you, here I am. And then sort of after the match and the comments, like his English is good. He couldn't speak English when he came here, could he? We had to get him
a long time after as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah. We had to get him a German translator, not a Portuguese one. And I just think it's a really nice snapshot of where we are with this sort of integration, with this cohesion, with this, not just the squad in itself, but the club and the fans. And it was just lovely to watch him yesterday and see how happy he was.
It's quite an interesting thing I've just thought about here now, just to think about that reaction as well. When you think Ayoze Perez kind of right. was very much derided at times as a Newcastle player, and his kind of reaction was to stick his fingers in his ear during these celebrations, and not that, to criticise him so much, but like it's just interesting to see how Joe Linton's kind of responded to that criticism and hasn't kind of put up a barrier to kind of say, oh,
it doesn't matter what you say, who cares,
like, he's score. Actually like, has, you can tell as well, like he was desperate to be a success here, and especially in that interview after the game yesterday as well, like, he's just absolutely buzzing that he's managed to nail it basically, and now he's a massive contributor. And I mean the big thing for yesterday, and my illustrious friends, colleagues on this podcast have been disparaging him for absolute disgraceful reasons, but lovely for him as well. I think that one was for me yesterday. Thank you, Big Joe.
He was looking for you, wasn't he? In the end,
he was. I wasn't there. Like the fact that if he can add goal, and I completely understand the point he's made previously in terms of like he needs to kind of provide more game kind of changing moments. And he does that, I think, in other areas. But if he can start adding goals to his game, like there'll be nothing else to do basically. And I think that's the type of goal that he should be more capable of getting on that late run in the box. I mean, what the Brentford defender, Janssen, who's their best, probably one of their best players in the air, and Joe Linton just bullies him. And
I wouldn't get in Joe Linton's way.
Yeah. No, but that's the point, isn't it? No. Is that he's got so many kind of qualities that could provide that. So it'll be really interesting to see if he can add that element of goals to his game from a midfield position. That's going to be huge.
Yeah, regular listeners of the pod will know I've been demanding goals from Joe Linton, and it's not a case of, it hasn't come from a place, and Norman's been the same, it hasn't come from a place of not rating him. It's quite the opposite. It's, I know he's capable. I didn't used to think he was capable. Used to think he wasn't good enough playing the Premier League. Was wrong about that, completely wrong about that, emphatically wrong about that. Before I come back to you, Ben, it's just a case of like, now what we're seeing from Joe Linton, I still think that we don't know what the ceiling is, and that's tremendously both exciting for us and terrifying for opponents. Mm-hmm. If this kid, this 25-year-old lad, who seems to be more at home in the Premier League than any other league in the world at the minute, obviously the Premier League suits Joe Linton so well in the way he plays, if he can start contributing 5, 10 more goals a season, 5, 7 assists a season, then 40 million will start to look like, a fraction of the lad's actual value. Do you want to come back with me, mate?
Yeah, all I was going to say was as well, it's interesting, and it's kind of at that point as well, as I think it's about him just understanding and developing his game to realise where he can, where he's got the advantage. And I think that was probably the difficulty he had when he first came, was he was being played out on the wing, where it's kind of, you've got to have a bit of pace about you or a bit of guile to beat a man. And he didn't quite have that, whereas he's found this kind of industrious way of just bouncing people out of the way, basically. And I think that's the point, is I think up to now he's struggled because, I mean, he's finishing isn't as crisp as maybe you'd like it. He's kind of, I think it's the hesitation when he gets into goal scoring opportunities. It's not like he's not a natural goal scorer, but I think where he can dominate people is in the air.
And against Brentford.
Yeah, well, there is that as well.
Scourge of Brentford.
Yeah. Can we play them every week, please? But no, I think that's going to be a big thing for him is how he, as you say, what's the ceiling? Like, it's going to be dependent on how he kind of identifies as where can he get like advantages on the pitch. And I think that goal yesterday just showed like those late runs into the box and with decent balls, which we haven't seen too many of, but that was a great ball in from Fraser. Like with that's going to potentially be a big avenue for more goals.
I tried to remain, to like look at him through a sort of more critical, objective lens during his resurgence in form, because I thought, how can a player go from being so bad to being so good so quickly? In part, me thought, well, because he was so bad for so long, the performances that we're seeing are being looked at as better than what they are because they were so bad. And that was me trying to be objective. However, that guy's out the window now. Like, I'm being completely subjective. He was out of this world yesterday. He gave like everything that you wanted to see from a midfielder in that position. His movement, his ability, his tackling, his work off the ball, is making himself available, taking players on, scoring an outrageous header. He was totally phenomenal yesterday. Like, and I'm 100% absolutely glad to be proven completely wrong about how he is. And if this form continues, if he continues to play like he did yesterday, he's not going to play that at every game. No footballer does. But if we're getting performances like that with him, like for the rest of the season, then the sky's the limit. Ultimately, it's brilliant to see, and I'm absolutely delighted for him because he's clearly a lovely kid as well. So he's also proven that I know absolutely nothing about football. So if you're listening to me right now, don't take anything on board that I'm saying. It's all rubbish.
I'm just going to say he'll be listening to this and he'll be writing this down for his Ballon d'Or speech in 2025.
Jolinton, te amo muito, homem. Te amo muito. I love you. The Brazilian, Jolinton, yesterday, do you know he attempted more dribbles than any other Newcastle player? So talking from an offensive sort of offensive capacity, he attempted more dribbles. He basically ran through Brentford's midfield, sort of unopposed because they're scared of him. His work rate was ridiculous. He won more duels and he regained more possession in the final third of the pitch on more occasions than any of his teammates. So how was that for a start? Attacking wise, yesterday he was bloody brilliant.
He was. A long way to continue. Brighton, beware. We'll talk about that in the week on the full match preview we'll have for patrons. Let's talk about the red card and the influence it had on the game. Charlotte, you wanted to talk about Newcastle's game management.
Yeah, I just, well, obviously, we after the red card, which was not random, it was very clear red card. Thomas Frank said it was a random situation, which is very strange. We can talk about that. Yeah, dominated the first half really, really comfortably. Brentford made some changes at half time and came out with a lot more attacking. They tried. They really did try. And I think Dubravka made one entire save in the second half. Yeah. He wasn't a very busy man yesterday. But I did think in the second half it was sort of this feel of where we've taken our foot off the gas in the past, you're sort of like, what are you doing? Yesterday it was sort of a very slight taking the foot off the gas, but still completely controlling the game with a couple of breaks for Brentford. And just this sort of like comfort that we haven't had in a really long time, this sort of ability to think, okay, we're two ahead, we could get more, we're running the game, let's not like sort of run ourselves into the ground. We did create some opportunities, but generally I just thought it was just really, really nice. It was like watching a game and thinking, we're not going to capitulate. I know it was against 10 men and I know that is an advantage, but it was just a pleasant way of watching the football.
I totally agree, and I was really impressed by Newcastle's second half. Would I have liked to see more goals? Of course, again, I'll say it. I thought the Brentford goalkeeper makes a series of close range saves that he has no right to make. Put him at target, deserves to be on the score sheet. Ryan Fraser too. And, you know, there was points in the second half, right in the second half, if people remember, it was a point when Eriksen tried to play 1-2 and then we got a free kick for handball. Newcastle had eight players in the penalty area. Eight outfield players in the penalty area defending that situation centrally. that's just, that's a desire that, you know, people might, well, a couple of people, I think even the commentators talked about Newcastle taking their foot off the gas in the second half. I don't think they did. I think they realised that Brentford, if Newcastle United were compact in that second half, Brentford weren't going to score.
Yeah.
Didn't have to commit men forward, you know, into the box in huge numbers. We didn't have to get caught in counter-attacks. We didn't have to leave ourselves vulnerable to Brentford's many long balls that they played yesterday. You know, it was a really, really well-managed, competent performance. There's that word competent again, which we talked about in recent weeks. It's an absolute pleasure to see the team come out and just completely kill the game like that.
The confidence, just the like total self-belief, like we've got this and it's okay. Like we will, we're fine.
Norman?
I'm glad we took our foot off the gas. We're 2-0 up and we're playing against 10 men and we've got a period of fixtures coming up where we're playing Thursday, I think. So players running themselves into the ground unnecessarily. What's the point? Yesterday, there was one point yesterday. I mean, we had 63% possession. So we took our foot off the gas, but we still dominated the ball. And also, there was a situation yesterday where for about 2 minutes, there were early is. There must have been a string of like 50-odd passes put together. We were early in. So we took our foot off the gas, but hey, nice one. We're 2-0 up, so who cares? Brilliant. In fact, more taking my foot off the gas, please, because it means we're 2-0 up. Happy days.
Yeah, as well, just quickly on that red card, Matt Hoggett's very, very lucky that he didn't break his leg or his ankle. His foot was fully planted. His weight was on it. The force of the tackle from De Silva was shocking. It was a really, really bad challenge. Someone has just tweeted conversation in Twitter saying Mike Dean's missed a red card that again had to be overturned by VAR for the same player earlier this season or last season. So, you know, Dean has form. I find it incredible that Matt Target had a foul given against him for being stamped on. You know, me and Ben watched it live and a lot of people on social media said, Norman, I appreciate you from the away and you've got a bad view of it there. Oh, I didn't realise it was a red card. I didn't know it was a red card, but it definitely wasn't a fucking foul against Matt Target who won the ball while being stamped on. Mike Dean was incredibly close to it and had a clear view. And then we might talk about this more on TFTV, which is a show me and Charlotte do on YouTube, on the True Faith YouTube channel, which you should check out if you haven't already. You know, Dean, when the camera goes and when he's, you know, listening to the mic, to the person telling him to go and check the screen, he gives like, oh, really? Like, very...
Me?
Yeah, like, are you sure? Like, will this not just waste crucial seconds while I confirm my correct decision? Fuck off, Mike Dean. Absolutely hopeless. Honestly, the bloke is hopeless. But we're one, so I don't have to get too angry about it. Let's get into the real nitty-gritty of this podcast. Let's talk about sensational performances from lovely Newcastle United players. Norman, you want to wax lyrical about Ryan Fraser taking away, my friend.
I will quickly, though, before I do that, I just need to remind people of Joe Willock's reverse pass for the Matt Target chance in the first half. Does anyone recall that? It was out of this world.
I've only watched the highlights about 9 times, pal.
Oh man, it was so perfect. So that takes me on a target, doesn't it? And Ryan Fraser, right? First of all, Eddie Howe switching Murphy and Fraser, making them switch flanks from West Ham. Brilliant. Brilliant decision. Brentford played a big centre-half at right wing-back, right-slash-right-back yesterday. Fraser and Target absolutely ripped them apart. The partnership, I think that's the first time the two of them have played on the same side of the pitch, right? It was superb. They complemented each other fantastically. In fact, it wouldn't be unreasonable to say that they both probably could have had 2 goals each. They both could have scored twice. That's a left back and we're a left winger. The other beautiful thing about having those two players on the pitch is you've got in-swinging corners. Target in-swinger from the right, Fraser in-swinger from the left. It's really refreshing to have players who can, every time they go up to take a corner, you're thinking, get in, he's going to in-swing this in the 6-yard box. Something could happen, yeah. I think Sean Orrick, who was at the match yesterday, said it best about Fraser. He said, I think he had 20% of the possession on his own. He was absolutely brilliant, but like everywhere as well, not just from an attacking sense. There's a moment in the first half where the corner that Brentford get, that we break from to score, I don't know if you recall this, but they were attacking on the right-hand side. They're just about to have a shot to whip across in, and he just throws his body in the way of it. They get the corner, we break. And also, it was Fraser's knock-on to Shea. Fraser, so he, not only does he stop the shot coming in, they get that corner. We then clear the corner. It's his ball to Shea that Shea does brilliantly with, and obviously we get that second goal. He's a man reborn, and we've mentioned this in the last few podcasts now, but the post-match comments of Fraser on Match of the Day about Eddie Howe were just so revealing. They were spectacular. He's obviously, this is someone who probably saw his career going down the drain, right, under Steve Bruce. A player who, if Steve Bruce had stayed, probably would have been shifted on this pre-season, and he would have gone to a club maybe, you know, worse than what Newcastle were. All of a sudden, he's back in a side as one of the better performers in the Premier League, and he's got a future at a club that's only going in one direction, and I'm delighted for him. And as I say, mate, Target and Fraser on the left-hand side. I mean, I love Maxi, and there's obviously always going to be a role for him in the team. But put it this way, if I see those two announcing a lineup between now and the end of the season, and even at the start of next season, I don't think I'll be disappointed. Wonderful. Wonderful to see. Long live Ryan Fraser, that's all I'm saying.
Ryan Fraser. I just can't get over how much fit, like everybody on the team, but like Ryan Fraser's fitness. Like he was running the entire length of the pitch, attacking and defending the entire, and realize that's his job, but like the fitness level, and it is, it's week on week you're seeing improvement. It's not just like they're all really fit now and they're remaining really fit, they're all getting better, and it's such a pleasant thing to see. Kept getting called the diminutive Scotsman on the commentary yesterday, which made me laugh. But yeah, just this incredible athleticism from not just him, but it stuck out to me yesterday.
Absolutely nothing diminutive about him.
No, he's a unit.
He's the tallest 5'6" player I've ever seen in my life.
I really enjoyed, I've said this before, I really enjoy his early ball. Like, he doesn't piss about, he shifts it and gets a ball in. You know, he obviously has to try and create space, and not every ball is perfect, but Chris Wood all of a sudden probably should walk away yesterday with at least two goals. So far, Chris Wood, Norman, I'll probably bring you in because I know you want to talk about Wood. So far, Chris Wood, I mean, Chris Wood's league record at Newcastle United is insane. The bloke hasn't tasted defeat. But so far, although some people have been critical of them, it's been very hard to criticise him for missing chances because he hadn't had any. He should have scored yesterday, and that's all down to Ryan Fraser. That partnership, I think, between the two of them will only get better, and I'm really keen to say, you know, what an option for Howe to have ASM, who doesn't particularly cross well, but if it's not going well in the game, Hoyam on the right, move Fraser to the left if ASM is to come back in on the left. Mm. They're just options, and also the team, the opposition that you're playing, know that switch can come any time. So if they're doing potentially well, closing down one side of the pitch, well, not to worry, lads, we'll see you on the other side. Norman?
I'm still confident that if Wood plays in every game between now and the end of the season, which it's looking likely because obviously Wilson Fitness is up in the air. We don't know where that's at. I'm still confident he'll get four goals. But even then, as you said, we haven't lost a game since he's played, and he's making a difference. He causes panic among defenders. He's hard. He's a big lad who gets stuck into the big centre-halves that other teams have. I mean, you know, sometimes he sits a little bit deeper, but then that doesn't matter because he drags defenders out with him. Yesterday, you could argue he could add a couple of goals. One of those, if those chances keep coming in, one of them's going to go in. When one of them goes in, that's when his confidence goes up. But I think his contribution at the minute is... It's necessary, but put it this way, as much as I like Dwight Gayle, if Dwight Gayle had been up top instead of Chris Wood in those games, do I think we would have picked up as many points as we have? Probably not, because what Wood's doing at the moment is a lot of the sort of dirty, nasty work that you need a big centre-forward to do, and it's then allowing players like Ryan Fraser, like Matt Target coming up from full-back, to have the space to do that magic with the ball. It's also allowing people like Joe Willock to make late runs into the box. Julian, he's creating that space for those players to dart into. So I can't criticise Chris Wood at all because I think he's doing a job. And look, if he was doing so poorly, how wouldn't have him in the team, right?
Fabian Shaw is a player who simply must be given a new contract at Newcastle United. Fuck everyone else. Just give Shaw a new contract. Like, we talk a lot about, and people listening to this will, I'm sure, think about a lot about the improvements Eddie Howe has made in players who were underperforming before. Shaw couldn't get in the team under Bruce for large parts of Bruce's tenure. That Wolves game, he didn't make the team. He was behind Clark. He was behind Fernandez, Lascelles. His career at Newcastle United was almost certainly over. And he probably, if for some miracle Bruce had stayed in the job, he probably would have left in the January transfer window. As much as Dan Byrne, who we're not going to give a big errand to this week because he gets talked about in glowing terms every week. More of that next week, hopefully after Brighton. He just looks like one of the best centre-backs in the Premier League. If you think about how coveted ball-playing centre-backs are in the Premier League who offer something of a goal threat, I mean, I don't know. Like, I mean, you have the players who play for Manchester City, you have Virgil van Dijk and one or two others, but Fabian Shaw, Norman, you've said this before, I think you said it on our True Faith Any Questions podcast on Friday night for patrons, £3 million from Deportivo La Coruña has got to represent one of the best ever transfers for this club in the Premier League in terms of value for money. That, Norman, you wanted to talk about him in the goal yesterday. First of all, what's he doing there? But that we'll ignore that now. I don't know why Fabian Schär is the furthest player forward as we clear a corner.
It's because Chris Wood's back there doing his graft so he can get forward and chip in with goals.
There it is.
But Norman, you know, Norman did the match day podcast for Patreon yesterday where you get to hear his reaction to the goals live. You know, talk through your opinion of what happened there, mate.
It was one of those like moments that will live with me forever. As I see, you know, you get those moments and you're thinking, there are quite a few now, but like literally deathbed moment where I'm like, oh yes, Fabian Schär, I remember that day. That was good. And then I'm dead now. And I won't be disappointed. I mean, I won't know because I'll be dead, but you know what I mean. So the corner, as soon as it's cleared, he just steams out of nowhere, right? Fraser clears the ball, and you're thinking, hold on, that's Fabian Schär. And the control, the way he takes that ball down, he's got like a defender coming up against him or, you know, someone covering when Brentford had got the corner, and he just flicks it around. And you're thinking, and from where we were, because it's obviously the other side of the pitch, right? And the way that your kind of depth, your depth is out of us, it's like your depth perception, you're thinking, he's gone all the way. He's going to go all the way. It's going to be Messi-esque. And then not only does he not only is he not greedy, he has the kind of the calmness, the purpose and the control to put like the perfect pass onto the, by the way, brilliant Joe Willock. That run that Willock made to get from Warbox to theirs that quickly, no one keeping up with him, flying in perfectly timed and wonderful finish. But Schär, I mean, like, tell me another centre-half. Name your centre-half playing in English football right now who could do that. And I'm not saying that this isn't me saying he's the best centre-half in the Premier League, but I'm talking about the control of a ball on the halfway line at that height to make that run and to play such a precise pass for an assist. Like, I genuinely can't recall a centre-half being able to do that. Didn't give me a £85 million Harry Maguire. Give me a £3 million Fabian Schär any day of the week.
Yeah, no, yeah. Spot on. I mean, that's the big thing with Schär, isn't it? We've always kind of said, like, that's has been a wasted, like, talent of his, is how good he is, like, bringing the ball out and contributing to the attacks. And I think that's the biggest travesty, well, one of the biggest travesties, as Alex alludes to there, that about Bruce just did not have a clue how to use the bloke. And
Ben, just... Or any. Just... Yeah. I'm going to cry here because imagine how good Florian Lejeune would be.
I know. Yeah, I know. Yeah. And that's the thing, isn't it? Is like just knowing how to utilize these players and put them in positions of strength. And you spot on, is it? I mean, Schär has, and we've all said it in the past, has mistakes in his locker, but like the way he's playing at the minute, like, is so full of confidence. Like, even when he does make a mistake, like, he's getting away with it because, like, I mean, there was a couple of times where he had some kind of shaky moments where he was getting closed down in dangerous positions, or sometimes his clearances don't always kind of come off. But, like, he brings something to the team that no other player within the defence anyway can do. And you spot a Norman, kind of just that goal epitomises, like, why he needs to be in the team, because there's absolutely no chance Jamal Lascelles or Kieran Clark, and it's not to disparage those lads.
Fernandes.
Yeah. It's not to say those guys aren't great or anything, but like, he just gives you something so much more different. And yeah, just the other point I want to make was, as you said, the biggest thing for me, £3 million for him. What was it? 12 million for Trippier or whatever, 13 for Burn. Target on a loan. We have completely sorted our defence. Hopefully, I mean, if Target, obviously we don't know what's going to happen with Target long term, but like this defence, and we talked about it before, like, this looks so good on, like, literally pennies. Like, 30 million doesn't even get you half of Harry Maguire. And yet we've got, like, a like all-encompassing, like, back four that attack, contribute goals, like, set up goals, keep clean sheets. It's just, like, an unbelievable transformation from kind of everyone involved in those transfer dealings. Like, they've absolutely hit the ball out of the park in every, like, way they could, and it's like, you just can't be kind of more appreciative and supportive of everything that's going on.
Special mention for Joe Willock as well. We don't have time to get into him, but I just think he's some footballer. He has talent that others don't. His ability to read the situation before the ball comes to him and go past players, it's magical to watch. And I'm so pleased that he kept faith in himself. How kept faith in Ben? You want to make a quick point?
Just want to say as well, like, just a massive shout out to Eddie Howe, who, like, just with a bit of confidence, has turned, like, so many of these players around. When you look at what Bruce was doing them, supposedly the man manager, the players guy, had literally, like, basically got us all writing the majority of these blokes off.
Yeah, brilliant little segue for me, because I want to finish off this podcast by talking about Eddie Howe. 14. Eddie Howe.
Never heard of him.
Yeah. Not even going into what that joke is. If you heard it, you heard it a couple of months back. 14 points from 18 available in 2022. When Newcastle drew with Watford on January the 15th, when you and I, Charlotte, left St James's Park with you consoling me that it would all be okay, and I wasn't sure it would. Newcastle were 13 points behind Brentford at the end of that game, and were 7 points behind Leeds and Everton, and had played a game more than both of those teams. Like, that situation seemed desperate. I didn't think we were down, but it seemed like it was going to be an extraordinary thing to happen, to just get in front of those teams by the end of the season. Never mind find us in the position that we are now. Charlotte, want to make a point?
Yeah, it is extraordinary. It seemed like it would have to be an extraordinary thing. It is. It is extraordinary. Not many managers, not many teams could do what we've done.
Totally agree. And it's just, you know, I have to stop doing this. I have to embrace this new version of Newcastle United. But I think about the games last season against Palace and Leeds at home. And, like, we were told that was the good stuff. Yes, we lost both games. But we were really good for 20 minutes. Really, what a good 30 there. You know, first 30 against Palace, that club is just dead. That version of that club that we were told to respect and to, like, embrace is having a good 20 or 30 minutes against really bad teams in the Premier League. Like you said, Norman, I think we'll finish above Leeds this season. If we can beat Palace at home whenever we play them, because the fixture might get moved, I think we'll finish above them, and we're better than them. And I think we're better than all of the teams in the bottom half at the minute. Leicester have got games in hand. We're 2 points behind Leicester. Think back to that Leicester fixture, that 4-0 fixture. We're 2 points behind them. Now, we need them to beat Burnley in midweek so they can be 5 points ahead of me, and I'll be absolutely fine with that. But what an unbelievable turnaround from Eddie Howe. Some huge quotes from Amanda Staveley and her husband, Murdoch Ducey, this week in The Athletic with our great friend of all Newcastle fans, George Culkin, saying they want Eddie Howe to be the next Alex Ferguson. It's a big thing. It's a big thing to say, okay, but you know what? Fuck it. Like, he's doing an unbelievable job. He's the leader that we needed. And I thought Staveley made a great point in that piece that if we hadn't got Howe, would be worse. I don't think there's anyone that could have come in and done a better job. And it's, you know, what I love about him is he doesn't have a secret formula or a plan or a revolutionary tactic. He's just competent, professional, and diligent, and a leader. He's ambitious and he's committed, and he's all of the things that I want Newcastle United to be. So he couldn't be doing a better job, and I'm so proud that he's here. Norman, your thoughts on Howe, mate?
Spot on those, mate. What you've just said there, I think the Staveley and Guidusi comments are fantastic, because it's ambition right now. Them saying we want to be the next Alex Ferguson, brilliant. It's better than them saying we just want him to keep ticking along for now. Want him to keep ticking along for now, right? It's the complete antithesis of what we had prior, and I welcome it with open arms. I also, in terms of how I feel, like, you know, when Boromir is like lying, dying, and Aragorn stands next to him, he's like, my brother, my captain, my king. That's basically how I feel about Eddie right now. My brother, my captain, my king. I will follow you to the end. I'm incredibly confident that he is, and now I am, I'm incredibly confident he's a person who can get us finishing in the top five in a couple of seasons. I mean, that what reading that article that George Colton wrote, which is an absolutely superb piece of journalism, the fact that he's as dedicated as he is, the fact that Staveley and Guidusi said they're a little bit sort of fascinated with him, I just think it's wonderful. Yeah, and we've said this from day one, right? He's a manager who wants to constantly learn, and we've seen the improvement he's made to those players. And one player I'm going to bring into this, very much derided. Well, our third choice right back who cost $4.5 million from like Rennes reserves or whatever it was. Emil Kraft was really good yesterday. Like, not brilliant, but just solid, right? He was solid. And there's a player there already who, you know, he plays for the Swedish national team, right? So he cannot be terrible as what we've seen, right? As terrible as what we've seen. And yesterday we saw a player who did a really good job. And that, again, is testament to how, my God, I can't see anything more, mate. My brother, my captain, my king.
Yeah, I wish you could see Dodsy's face right now. You bringing up Lord of the Rings quotes. He's on cloud nine.
I am. And to finish the pod, this is what it's like. You know, football is a genuine distraction at the minute from problematic world events, to say the least. It's like the thing that it's supposed to be. Walking home from yours, Ben, after watching the match yesterday with Si, and I'm just thinking about Brighton. I'm thinking about the day. I'm thinking about the atmosphere. I'm thinking about the flags. I'm thinking about, can we beat them? Where will we be in the league? If we beat them, it's an absolute pleasure to support the football club at the minute. And it's a pleasure to do these podcasts as well. We appreciate you listening very much. If you like the shows, please leave us a 5-star rating on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify and leave a comment if you can. It helps us tremendously and we need your help to further these messages. We're also on Patreon, £6.60, but you've listened to the podcast to the end, so you know that already and you listen every week. Thank you to you, Norman, Charlotte and Ben. We'll be back with a free podcast midweek, looking in detail at that, those Amanda Staveley quotes and also the future of the football club. And then we'll be back next Sunday with the Brighton free podcast. Speak to you all then. Bye-bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.